And this is the 18th principle of devotion, not to cause harassment to other creatures. So one should treat other creatures just like a father treats his son. Even if the son is foolish, we see here in the neighborhood, there are two children of one Baniya, one businessman, and they're both retarded. They may be twins, I'm not sure. Sometimes you see them on the street, Aibo. They're retarded, they're mentally retarded, and also physically quite slow developing. But they're Brijvasis, they're Radhakanvasis. But the father and mother, they don't neglect them. They feed them every day, they dress them very nicely in clean, new clothes, fresh clothes, and they try to care for them. Even though they aren't very much contributing to the real happiness of the parents because they're kind of lost in their own world. They're not very interactive, as they say. They just go here and there and do whatever they want. They can't communicate. They're almost like animals to some extent. And they're kind of neglected and harassed a little bit by the other children and people in the neighborhood. But the father still loves them and cares for them, just as much as he would love and care for his sons who are quite ordinary and responsive and loving and obedient. So the same way, we should be very careful in dealing with other living entities. Krishna's in their heart. We should never be a source of pain or harassment or anxiety. Usually sattvic people, developed people, soft-hearted people, they don't have much problem with this principle. But sometimes many types of people come to the devotional line, many rajasic jivas, many tamasic jivas, and they carry over these lower tendencies into the field of bhakti. So sometimes you see among so-called devotees, sometimes people are a little bit violent or a little bit mean, what we call mean, and unfriendly towards other creatures, throw stones at the dogs and for no reason even, or hit them with a stick. And all this is called jiva hinsa. This is violence against other living entities, and it comes back. It's antithetical to love. It's against love. Expressing hatred, expressing envy, expressing hatred, expressing violence, either physically or emotionally, towards any other individual, human beings especially, or even lower creatures, is very reactionary. And it's very much against bhakti. It's called bhakti pratikul. It is against. It is not favorable. Anukul and pratikul. Anukul means favorable, and pratikul means unfavorable. It's unfavorable for devotion. Bhakti devotion means love. We love me, love my dog. So these type of tendencies to be mean, tendencies to be nasty, tendencies to be violent, these are all products of tamagun. That means there's someone, when these tendencies are seen within us, that we can recognize and understand these are symptomatic of deep coverings of ignorance over our hearts and minds. So these have to be removed. That means we have a lot of cleansing to do, a lot of internal cleansing to do by bhakti sadhana, and especially by nam, jap, and kirtan. Because the purified soul is an agent of love. The purified soul is simply what we say a premi bhakta. All pure devotees are premi bhaktas. They're full of devotion and full of love. They love all living entities. They love the Lord specifically and directly, and they love all of His parts and parcels. So this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is a book about love. It's a book about pure love of God. How to enter that ocean of pure love of God. How to swim and float and dive and submerge ourselves in the nectarine ocean of devotion. So all these are principles to bring out love. These are principles which will bring out the love and suppress the anger, suppress the envy, suppress the anger, the envy, the violence towards others, and bring out, invoke loving tendencies, and invoke loving sentiments, invoke loving behavior. That's what these 64 limbs are all about. They're all about becoming lovers of God. And we say, most of us when we join, at least we hope so, most of us when we join this movement, we are looking for something. We're seekers. We're seekers, searchers. We are on a spiritual quest. We're trying to find the real essence of life, deeper meaning in life, fulfillment. Ultimately, we were looking for love. We tried to find love, which is the fulfillment of all inner heart's desires, of all jivas. We tried to find love in various material arrangements, through people, through engagements, through different exchanges. And we were, each of us, unsuccessful in one way or another. So somehow we were led to God. And we had the idea that God is love. God is love, love is God. And it's a fact. God is love, love is God. But love also has personality. And love also has activities. And love also has a place where love is expressed. And the place where love is expressed is Vrindavan. And the activities of love are Leela. And the participants in the loving Leela are the Prem Purushottam, the love God personified, and all his loving parts and parcels. So somehow we came to this side, to the side of divine love. The purpose of life is love of God. So how can one on one side try to cultivate love of God, on the other side, oh, mosquito, oh, fly, or cockroach, or kill this step on this cockroach, or I'll kill any type of living entity. It's not possible. It's working against ourselves. Srupa Goswami is only choosing 64 principles here for us to consider and to meditate on and to act upon. And if we're deficient in any of these principles, we must adopt these principles very deeply and seriously. And if we're following already these principles, then all the better. If we aren't, then we should adopt them. So we should not cause harassment to other creatures. Creatures means ant, cockroach, rat, dog, pig. Oh, this pig, this dirty pig, throw a stone at it. We become angry. We become disturbed when we see a dirty pig. Why? Because we are also dirty pigs. Actually, we're disturbed by ourselves. If a person is disturbed by someone in the environment or something in the environment, the object in the environment or the entity or the person is not the cause of disturbance. We are the cause of disturbance. The disturbance is within us. Due to ignorance, we become disturbed due to ignorance and passion. But one is situated in transcendental knowledge, he's not disturbed in any situation. Dhira, dhira, jana, priyo, priyakaro, nirmatsaro, pujito. Disturbance is caused by envy. No envy, no disturbance. So we get disturbed if we see a pig or a dog because we're envious of the pig. Oh, the pig is having such a good time. He's just enjoying. And I have to work so hard. I had to work in my job so hard just to get a little money to get food. And I had to work so hard to get a little fat on my belly. And he doesn't have to work at all. He just walks around, eats stool, and becomes so fat on his belly. And I had to work so hard just to produce 2 children. And he doesn't do anything, and he has 16. So we become envious. We don't even know how we're becoming envious. Because it's our very core nature of a conditioned soul. Icha dvesha smutena dvanda mayana bharata. It's dvandva, icha, and desire and envy, desire and hate. Hate and envy are the same. Living entities born in delusion are overcome by these dualities. Living entities, material world, desire and hate, desire and envy. So the 19th principle is this, seva nama paradhanam bharjanam. Avoidance of all offenses in regard to seva, which means service of Krishna, and nam, or chanting of the name of the Lord, avoiding seva and nama parads. This is illustrated in the Varaha Puran. Mamarchana parada ye kirtyante vasudemaya vaishnavena sada te tu varjaniya prayatnata. So, Lord Varaha, of course, is speaking here in the Varaha Puran. He's one of the Das Avatars. Actually, the which one is Meena? Then maybe third one, Varaha Avatar. And Das Avatar, so he's addressing Mother Bhumi because she was in distress because of Hiranyaksha. Had harassed her and knocked her down to the Garbhadak ocean. So she prayed to the Lord, and the Lord appeared as a transcendental boar. Keshava drita shukara rupa jaya jagadish hare. So Jagadish Krishna appeared as a boar incarnation to rescue Goddess Earth from the fallen condition of the Garbhadak ocean due to the harassment of Hiranyaksha. And so he picked her up there with his tusks. And at that time he said this, he spoke this verse. Vrahadev said, O Bhumi, O Mother Earth, all of those offenses which are incurred in my service, in other words, while performing archan, or temple worship of the deity, that have been described by me, these offenses must always be avoided by all true Vaishnavas with particular care. In second translation, Lord Varaha said, devotees should avoid the offenses in deity worship described by me, O Bhumi, at all times and with great care. Jiva Goswami has commented on this verse, and he actually has cited the various offenses of service or archan according to the teachings of the Agamas. And of course, it's a rather long list. This is also part of principle number 20. This is the 20th limb of devotion. All right, well, this is another verse from Padma Puran about this principle. This is the 19th principle, the 19th out of 64, to avoid seva and nama parad. Seva parad means avoid offenses against the deity, and nama parad we know. So then he quotes that verse from the Vrah Puran, and then he quotes from Padma Puran. Sarva parad kridapi muchite hari samshaya. Harer apyaradanya kurya dvipara pamsava namashraya kadachit set taratyeva sanamata namno pi sarasurido yaparadat patatyada. A person who commits all offenses is freed from all those offenses by taking complete shelter of Hari. But the two-legged animal who commits offenses against Hari is freed from those offenses by taking shelter of Hari's name. However, though the name is the friend of all, by committing an offense against the name, a person falls to the lower regions. So, Jiva Goswami, in commenting on these two verses, which basically are one principle, 19th limb of devotion, avoiding seva nama parad, he gives the whole list here of all these principles which are also mentioned in Nectar Devotion. And we can read them. It's a long list. And this is 1 through 32. It's all about the deity. Deity means the Lord. For the Kanishtha, the Lord, the super soul appears as a deity. And by serving the deity and serving the Guru, one starts to realize that that super soul has appeared. His own super soul has appeared as a deity. And as he continues to serve the deity and approaches the Madhyam platform, then he realizes that the deity that he's worshipping is Ishtadeva, the Lord of his heart, is actually situated in the heart of everyone. And then he can appreciate the Lord's presence, not only in the temple, but in the hearts of others. And as he progresses to the platform Uttam, on the level of Uttam Bhakti, the Uttam Adhikari, the topmost devotee, or at least the topmost qualified devotee, he can begin to appreciate the presence of the Lord everywhere, not only in the heart of others, but also in every atom. His vision is such. So these are the these are called seva aparadhas. First, avoidance of seva aparadhas. These are 32 offenses in deity service. Deity means offenses to the Lord. Offenses to the deity means offenses to the Lord. So these are the 32 offenses. Entering the Lord's temple with shoes on or in a palanquin. We don't have much trouble with palanquins these days. But kings and queens and princesses, when they would leave the palace and move on the street, if they wouldn't move on an elephant, they would be carried in a palanquin. On one tape, Prabhupada tells in 1920s in Calcutta that even high-class people, he remembers his mother, as she was going to, next door to visit the neighbor, she would go in a palanquin. Palanquin is some wooden bars and some little seat in the middle with curtains all around it. And the lady would be carried from inside her house, outside, down the street, into the next-door neighbor's house, go into the living quarters, and then she would be set down. Then when the carriers of the palanquin would leave, then she would open the curtains and step out. No one in the public was supposed to see the face of a high-class lady, not even the sunshine. Such strict observances they had in those days. So it was often very common for people to run around town in palanquins, and they're carried on by foot. Now we run around in cars, and we can't drive our car into the temple, although some people try to drive as close as they can. And if they had their way, they would drive in the temple. Some of the people in Delhi, they have that idea. So don't enter the temple with your shoes on. Palanquin, of course, that becomes sometimes a big fight in the West. Somebody comes tromping into the temple. Why do I have to take my shoes off? What is this? Oh. So that's our etiquette here. I'm not taking my shoes off. I've seen many a times when the brahmacharis have a big wrestling match with some guy. Number two, not observing the festivals of the deity. So we should observe the festivals and take part, not that we just say, oh, it's Janmasthami, it's too much crowd, I'm going to avoid all this and stay in my room. We should observe the festivals of the deity, and of course it means your own deity. If you have a home deity, then you have to observe Janmasthami for your home deity. Or if you're taking part, if you regularly do puja in some local temple, then take part in the festival. Third offense, not offering obeisances in front of the Lord. Offering prayers to the Lord in an unclean state or after having eaten without washing properly. Offering respects with one hand. This is a very common one for the japa walkers. The japa walkers have this bead bag tied on the end of their hand. So when they offer obeisances, they go like, one hand goes down and the other hand goes like this. And they hold the bead bag up. Those more experienced devotees you see here at Radhakund, they have their bead bag around their neck and they put it behind their neck. And they lie down with both hands like this, touching the floor. And the beads are not on the floor, they're behind their neck. And then when they get up, they bring around their front and then they chant. There's different techniques. But mostly we see people break this, they commit this seva aparadha. Most people pay obeisance with one hand like this and then like this. One elbow holding their bead bag or just going like this. This is also an offense to put the bead bag on the floor. Circumambulating in front of the deity. That means the deity's there and you're going in circles round and round like this. Sometimes devotees would get some confusion when they're dancing in ecstasy in front of the deities going round circles. It seems to be against the rules. So that we have to see. But oftentimes people stand there in front of the deities and they just go like this. They do many circles in front of the deities. They have their own little rituals that people do in India. They have so many rituals. Another very common ritual people do in India is when they pay obeisances, they're lying on their stomach. This is men. Then they cross one ankle over another ankle. Have you ever seen? Their feet are supposed to be like this, but they cross one over like this. Instead of lying two legs parallel, 2 feet parallel on the ground, dandavats, they'll cross one foot over like this. Like going, they go like this. One leg is crossed. And there's nowhere in Shastras written that way, but it's a style. Like profile, special style. Spreading the legs in front of the deity, clasping the hands on the knees in front of the deity, lying down in front of the deity, eating in front of the deity. We discussed that. That means eating your, not eating a little bit of mop. If you get some, Prajari gives you some little mop or sad or garland, you can take that in front of the deity. But to sit down, bring your tiffins in, you're traveling on yatra, and you have your 5 tiffins or 7 tiffins, whatever. Sit them down in the temple, open them up, and start having a feast. Indians do like that, but usually not in front of the deity. Somewhere on the side, they often have a little picnic, especially in South India. They bring their tiffins right in the temple. Even there's facility for doing that, eating on the side rooms and stuff. Telling lies in front of the deity. So in other words, you can tell lies, but not in front of the deity. No. You shouldn't tell lies anywhere. In front of the deity or behind the deity or outside the temple room. Speaking loudly in front of the deity. Gossiping in front of the deity, crying in front of the deity, quarreling in front of the deity, fighting in front of the deity. Actually, we've seen all these things go on. In temples, we've seen fist fights. Someone takes a microphone to lead a kirtan. Somebody else doesn't like him and start a big fist fight over who's leading who's leading the evening arti. I've seen in Delhi. Thinking or thanking others in front of the deity, saying cruel words in front of the deity, covering oneself with a blanket in front of the deity. Sometimes when people do chant japa and things like that, they cover their heads with a blanket, or they want to go to sleep and bow its own glass and put their chatter over their head. But this is, you're not supposed to do this. You can cover your hand with some chatter or some cloth when you're chanting Gayatri, cover your hand, or you're chanting japa. Sometimes people cover their hand with cloth. But you're not supposed to cover your head in front of the deity. If you're in your own kutir, you want to cover your head, that's another thing. But it says a blanket also. It means you just throw a whole blanket over your head. It's kind of like Mayavad, merging in the blackness of your blanket. In other words, you're not showing your face to the deity. Praising others in front of the deity, using vulgar language in front of the deity, passing air in front of the deity. This is quite common. People do this. They don't know, especially visitors, congregation, they don't know this offense to pass air. So sometimes they do like that. Not offering seasonal fruits to the deity. Offering the deity what is already offered to someone else. In other words, the deity should get offered new things. Not that you get some sweater, some, I don't know, whatever. You don't like it, you wear it a couple of times, say, oh, this is not so nice, I think I'll give it to the deity. People do that. They have some old used junky car, and then they donate it to the deity. This is for the service of the deity department. It's an old beat-up car. They go out and buy a new one, and then their used beat-up car they donate to the deity. Donating to the temple means donating to the deity. Sitting with one's back to the deity, addressing others in front of the deity, praising oneself in front of the deity, being silent in front of the guru. This, of course, I'm sure it says something different here. But It doesn't mean when you come in front of the guru you're supposed to sing and dance. You're also supposed to be silent in front of the guru. But it means, here it says, keeping mum before one's spiritual master. In other words, when one comes before the spiritual master, they're supposed to say something. Jai Gurudev, Jai Srila Prabhupada. Then when we pay obeisances and offer pranam prayer, either to deity or to guru or Vaishnava, it's supposed to be spoken out loud. Not just supposed to say Namo Vishnu Padaya. And we think it's, sometimes people think, oh, this is artificial or this is not natural to lie on the floor and recite this mantra, Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamanati Namani. And so our mind says, oh, I don't want to do that, I'll just lie here. But it should actually, according to the Shastras, the other place says, the mantra should be distinctly pronounced and loudly pronounced with full attention and full heart. As Guru, we're offering obeisances to Guru. Guru is our everything. It's not that we can overlook Guru or neglect Guru. We only have an opportunity to lie on the floor because of Guru. We only have an opportunity to lie in front of the deities because of Guru. We only have an opportunity to serve Guru and lie in front of the Guru because of Guru's Kripa. So it's not a light thing to be taken lightly. Oh, my Guru, oh, Krishna. Dhanavads. You see, I saw in Los Angeles when Prabhupada came to take darshan of Rukmini Dwarkadish, the deities in L.A. I saw him maybe 20, 30 times. He came there different years. Stayed for 10 days, 5 days, 2 weeks. Whenever he would pay obeisances, he would take his time. Of course, he was a little older, but it wasn't because of his being so old. He was quite agile and quite quick on his feet. But he would lie down for a long time and offer many prayers. You could hear him speaking. And on several occasions, I didn't see, but some of his secretaries saw that right where Prabhupada's eyes were on the floor where he was lying, sometimes the rest of the floor would be dry. Right where his eyes were facing, there would be so much water there. Sometimes Prabhupada would cry quite a bit. While he was lying in front of the deities, he would cry in submission and love and so many of his own personal feelings of ecstasy and his relationship with Krishna and the deity form, Archamurti. So the floor would become moistened, noticeably wet from Prabhupada's tears, premashru. So probably we won't be able to do that when we offer obeisances, to moisten the floor with our tears of love. At least we can purify the ethers with the sound vibration of the Guru's pranam mantra. Because that sound glorifying the Guru, glorifying Krishna, it goes around the earth 7 times. So that earth needs that. The earth really needs to hear the Vaishnava Mahima and the Krishna Mahima. The earth really requires to hear the glories of Guru and the holy name. And the holy name of Guru and the holy name of Krishna. To counteract all the faithless, atheistic propaganda that's being broadcast every second around the world. And the last one is being silent in front of the deity. That's 31. And 32 is criticizing the deity. These are considered 32 offenses against Vishnu. In the Varaha Purana, other offenses which are found are listed in summary. And read these two. Eating a king's food. Touching the deity in the dark. Approaching the deity without proper rules. Opening a deity door without the sound of music or a bell. Now the door leading into the temple room, we should make some sound before we... It says here, to open the door of the temple of the Lord without music or making any sound. So we make some sound. Jai, Jai Damodar, Jai Giriraj. Gathering food offering seen by a dog. So this, you have to be careful. Offering of food to the Lord, which has been seen by a dog. In Jagannath Puri, they have a very elaborate arrangement. Where the kitchen is, where they're cooking Jagannath's food, there's an underground tunnel. There's a stairs there in the floor of the kitchen. They go down that stairs, and they go under the ground, and it comes up in the deity room. So they don't have any opportunity for any dogs. Not only dogs, but even subtle beings are not supposed to see the food. But generally, if you're moving somewhere, the kitchen may be at some distance from the deity room. So they put some cloth over the food. That way the dogs or the devas or the higher beings, they don't get to glance at it or contaminate it in any way by their envious glance or lusty, greedy glance. Because actually it's very contaminating. If a dog looks at an offering of bhoga, then you can't offer it to the deity. Even when you're eating, sometimes people eat outside in the street. If you're eating food, which we often see when we don't go around Parikrama, people are eating somewhere and some dog is standing next to him looking at the food. You know, he's about 3 feet away staring at their food. That's very, very bad for health. Eating that type of food actually poisons you. You actually become poisoned. Because all the mentality of the dog, all the mentality of a dog goes inside the food. If you have some food and there's some dog there, and they should separate a portion of it, throw it to the dog and let him become preoccupied with that food. And then you turn your back to that dog and eat without him seeing your food. Otherwise you're eating dog prasad. Dog kuta uchishta. It's not so good. It's very contaminated. So therefore people used to be very careful about where they ate, not only what they ate, and what time they ate, but also where they ate, away from the eyes of envious creatures, and especially animals like dogs. Breaking silence during worship, going to pass stool during worship, offering incense without first having offered ganda, garlands, and other items. Ganda means fragrant oil. Worshipping the deity with forbidden flowers. There's certain flowers that are used in Shiva puja, exclusively Durga puja or Shiva puja, and they're forbidden for worshipping Krishna. Like this hibiscus flower on that bush there, that red flower. That red flower is for Shiva puja. Shiva puja, Durga puja, Linga puja, or even Ganesh puja, which is basically Shiva's family. It's not meant for Krishna. There's another like yellow type, trumpet type flower, which grows like a weed around Vrindavan. Many people offer to Krishna. That's also forbidden. Krishna generally likes to receive fragrant flowers, very sweet and fragrant, and they're generally white in color. For some reason, the most fragrant sweet flowers are actually white. They're colorless. They're just white. They're pure, and the smell is pure, and the color is pure. White or pale yellow is considered to be sattvic. So these type of flowers, which are very fragrant, and generally they're white, they're to be offered but to the Lord. Not some useless... Then, as well as this, there are the following offenses listed in Varaha Puran. Worshipping the deity without having brushed one's teeth. Worshipping the deity after touching a woman in her menstrual period. Touching a lamp, which means like some kerosene oil lamp. Or a dead body. Wearing red cloth, blue cloth, unwashed cloth, soiled cloth, or another person's cloth. So this is, have to be careful about wearing, don't wear somebody else's dhoti to do puja. And this one here, it says, offer incense without having first offered ganda, garlands, and other items. Here it says that offering of incense before one has offered scented flower garlands to the Lord. So usually the incense is offered in Artik. And first bhog is offered, first the deity is bathed, then dressed, then bhog is offered. So one of the items of Shringar, dressing the deity, is offering a mala, flower mala. Some ratna mala, jewel malas, pearl malas, and then there's flower mala. So the flower mala is already in place in the deity. The dress, then flower mala, and then comes bhoga. And after bhoga, there's artik. So the artik is followed after the fragrant garland is offered. So it says it's one of the offenses to offer incense without having offered a fragrant garland, flower. So the flower, that's already done, because incense is part of artik, generally. Or incense is offered when bhog is offered. When you're offering the food or bhog to the deity, then one must offer incense. But that's, again, after the dressing, which includes a garland. So that's how we fulfill this instruction. I remember once on a tape, this was a kind of a question to what he said when they read Nectar Devotion. He said, how does Prabhupada say here, he says in Nectar Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, one should not wear red or blue cloth in front of the deities. Prabhupada, what does that mean that we should not wear red or blue cloth? And you can hear on the folio on the tape. Prabhupada says, it means we should not wear red or blue. That's all he said. So that was kind of an interesting answer. And I don't remember him saying anything more about that. So I had thought about this myself. I hadn't read anything anywhere. There must be, I suppose, some description somewhere. But I was just thinking that these two colors are reserved for Radha and Krishna. Because Radharani, especially Radharani, during the daytime, Radharani generally wraps her body with a nilambara, a blue sari, a covering of a blue sari, because she wants to be reminded of Shamsundar, because he's also blue. So Radharani's favorite color is blue. So she wears blue to remind her of Krishna. But then she also wears red. When she goes out to do Surya Puja and Surya Kund, especially on Sunday, then she wears red in the daytime, because when you worship Surya Dev, he's worshipped with everything should be red. You have a red mat, a red asan, wool asan for doing puja, and you use copper paraphernalia in the puja, which is basically reddish color, and you offer red chandan, red sandalwood incense, or red incense, and you offer red kunkum, and you offer java flowers to worship the sun god, which are bright red, and you also offer fruits to the Lord, pomegranate and apple, which are red. So this is the puja, and use a red cloth, an artik, because the sun god likes red. So Radharani, when she does Surya Puja at Surya Kund, she wears a red sari in the midday. So that's one reason she wears a red sari for the Surya Puja, because it's pleasing to Surya Deva, and it's a recommended color to wear when one does Puja of Surya Deva. And all the Puja items should also be red. But there's another reason why Radharani wears red in the afternoon, is because this is Krishna's favorite color. Krishna likes this red, this very fiery red, because this red represents anurag, very intense form of love, loving attachment for the beloved, which makes the beloved appear in a newer form at every minute. It's called anurag. So therefore, Rupa Goswami says, devotees should not wear blue or red. This blue and red are Radharani's colors. She wears a blue sari most of the time. Sometimes in Purnima time, she wears a white sari to disguise herself in the full moon rays. And Amavasya, she wears a blue sari at night. And a day she wears blue and alternates also with red sari. So these colors are reserved for Radharani. These are royal colors, red and blue. These are reserved for Radharani. So I was thinking of the answer like this when people were asking me why we don't wear red or blue. Worshipping the deity after seeing a dead body, passing air before the deity, again it's repeated. Worshipping after showing anger, worshipping after visiting the crematorium, worshipping with undigested food in the stomach, worshipping the deity. It says here, to worship the Lord in a state of indigestion, or to worship the deity of Lord Vishnu in the temple after smoking hemp or hashish, charish. So this this is something that's forbidden, and this is in Brahapuran, Jiva Goswami's commentary. One should not. It's very interesting. In this translation it says one should not worship the deity of Vishnu in a temple after smoking hemp or hashish. Here it says, another translation, one should not worship the deity after eating pig or duck or hing or kusumba leaves. Quite a difference in the translation. It shouldn't. Hing is quite a common spice in Indian cooking, and usually we have hing in the dal. So you're not supposed to worship the Lord after eating hing. So if you eat hing for lunch, and later that day you can't offer the Sringararti, it seems to be indicating that. Actually, hing is often prohibited by Vaishnavas. Actually, strictly speaking, the South Indian Vaishnavas, they don't eat hing. They don't eat eggplant, they don't eat carrots, they don't eat hing, they don't eat tomatoes. They don't offer them to the deities, Sri Ranga, Sri Ranganath, Venkateshwara Balaji, and all the big temples of South India. There's nowhere they're using hing, or eggplant, or carrots. In the Gaudiya Sampradaya, Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, people are crazy about eggplant. Bengalis can hardly pass a day without eating eggplant. That's a fact. And it's said in so many places that one should not, that eggplant is forbidden for Vaishnavas. And then they have the argument, they say that means white eggplant. There's a white eggplant and a purple eggplant. I don't know if the white one is just dyed purple or what. Because in India they can do anything. So this is something, these are some fine points. I don't think we have to worry about eating duck. Not too many devotees eat duck or pig. It's right there. Apparently there was some type of Vaishnavas who would do these things. And that means after some type of puja or something they would eat this thing. Touching a deity after taking an oil bath. So if you take a bath, you just cover your body with oil and don't wash that oil off with some basin flour or soap, and the body is considered contaminated and you cannot worship the deity. And then committing these actions leads to hell, according to Brahapuran. And there's so many more. This is called the Vidhi Nisheda. This chapter is Vaidhi Bhakti. So obviously we'll hear lots about rules and regulations. But the main regulation is to always remember Krishna lovingly, favorably, and never forget him. So these secondary rules, these are supportive rules for that main principle. The main rule, the most important rule, is to lovingly remember Krishna and always serve him in a favorable mood.